You're listening to WRUU-LP, Savannah, Georgia, 107.5 FM, WRUU.org. We are Savannah Soundings, community radio with global soul.
Check, check, one, two. Look like a little country. Some rock and roll and blues. Cause we sure love playing for good people like you. Let me know if you can hear me. Check, check, one, two.
You are listening to Savannah Music Local and Sustainable, the radio show that features conversations with and the music of local musicians and traveling musicians performing in town. I'm your host, Dave Lake. Tonight on Savannah Music Local and Sustainable, I'm talking with singer-songwriter Zach Landers. Zach will be performing at the First Friday for Folk Music concert on Friday, June 5th at the First Presbyterian Church, 520 Washington Avenue here in Savannah, in Stewart Hall there at the Presbyterian Church, beginning at 7:30 p.m. Welcome to Savannah Music Local and Sustainable, Zach Landers.
Hi, Dave. It's so good to be here. Thank you for having me here today. I look forward to our talk, and I've been thinking about you all week.
Okay, so let's get to know Zach Landers. Tell me your musical journey.
Just real quick, I came to Savannah in 2017 from Dallas, Texas. But I grew up in North Alabama and went to college there and grew up in a cotton mill town, Jacksonville, Anniston area. My grandparents lived down in middle Alabama, in Talladega, Alabama. They lived on a farm, and I used to go down there when I was just a child, and I would stay with them every summer. And I remember one summer we were sitting on the front porch snapping peas, and out of the garden I would help Mama, who I called my grandmother, shell peas. And I remember I was maybe 6 years old, and I saw up the dirt road this young man walking down toward their house. They lived at the end of the road, and I saw him walking down, and he had a guitar. And I remember him coming up to the porch, and Mama said, son, sing a song for my little grandboy. He's here with us this summer. And so this young fella, he reared back and he sang that old Jimmy Rogers song, Waiting for a Train. And I remember watching him in awe, and I thought, you know, one day I want to be able to do that. I want to be able just to walk someplace with a guitar and somebody say, sing a song for me, and me be able to do that. Well, shortly after that, I grew up in a very religious family. We were Pentecostal and Baptist. I would go with my uncle, who was a pastor at one of the churches. And I remember singing for the church congregation as a kid, growing up singing and traveling around to different churches. My uncle was later in a gospel quartet like you see today out there. And so they would bring me to sing with them. And I would get up about middle ways through the service, or the singing, as they called it back then. And I would actually do a couple of songs. And since I was a little kid, everybody got a real kick out of it. They would come up and they would compliment me and brag on me. And of course, that made me want to sing even more. So when I was 12, I started writing songs. I had the bug by then, and I had an old guitar by then, and started writing songs. My first few songs, I've often said, if you hear them on the radio, that is actually not one of mine, because none of mine gets played on the radio.
And so you started very young composing songs.
I did. I started writing at 12, and I've been writing songs all my life. I've spent a lot of time in the summer with my mama and papa, but during the school time, I would go back to Jacksonville, Anniston area, and I went to church there, and I would sing in the church there. And as I got old enough, they would take me around to some of the clubs and let me sing. And I was still just a kid. I was maybe, you know, 17 years old, but they would let me in, and I would sing for the folks there. And they wouldn't let me stay the entire time because they were drinking and dancing, but I would get to go in and sing a few songs and then head out. But after college, I moved to Birmingham, Alabama, and there's a television show there in Birmingham. It ran for many years. In fact, it ran when I was a kid. I used to watch it. We used it as a clock. The MC of the show, who also owned, actually, the show, Eddie Burns, he would say things like, okay, you folks, it's 6:45. You school kids waiting on the bus, it's time for the bus. And so we actually depended on him for a clock. He would also announce when we would have snow days. And so we would get to stay home on snow days. So we were always just really interested in everything that Country Boy Eddie had to say. Well, he ran that show for many years. And there were some really good people that came through there before I sang at Birmingham, Alabama. Some of the others were Shelby Lynn, and they had actually a lot of folks that came through. And then they had the regulars that actually worked there for years that never went anywhere, just worked there every morning. And the show would start about 5:30 a.m. And my days, I worked on Wednesdays at that show, and I had to show up every morning at 4:30 to the television station. And we didn't have a rehearsal; we just had a roll call. And we knew what time we need to get up on that little platform. And behind us, there were a piano player, they had two guitar players, they had a drummer, they had a whole band. And the band knew pretty much everything. So we would tell them ahead of time what we were going to sing and what key we would be in. And then we would stand up there on that mark. And when the show came back from commercial and that red light came on, we knew to put right into that camera and start singing. And that was our cue. So I learned pretty quickly how to sing under pressure. And I was in, a lot of homes. The show ran all over the state of Alabama. And naturally, when you're on a TV show, people get to know you. They come up and see you in shopping centers or at the mall, or I remember at the laundromat. People come up and want to take a picture with you and want your autograph and things of that nature. So I really got the bug there. And from there, after doing that show on Wednesday mornings, I did it for several years. After that, I moved to Houston, Texas. And out there in Houston, I was able to carry on my singing. I sang with several bands around different parts of Houston. I won, several song contests, both singing and writing throughout the years. And so I continued in my music endeavors there. And I eventually ended up in Dallas, Texas. And Dallas has a great music scene, as I think most people know. And so I was able to get in with a lot of the musicians there and begin performing with a lot of those guys. And we would travel and sing at different bars. The group of us would, or different, venues. And so by that time, I had written tons of songs. And of course, a lot of people in Dallas like singing my songs. But that's the compliment that you, as a songwriter, is to hear other people sing your songs. So I always love it when people want to sing my songs and when they do sing my songs. And so I traveled all over the Dallas-Fort Worth area, singing in various places out there prior to moving to Savannah. And now in Savannah and enjoying, playing music with a lot of the guys. We actually have what we call jam sessions where we sing. There's various ones around the area. There's one at Bowtie Barbecue, and we meet out on or the outdoor part, and there's about sometimes 20 of us that sing and play, and there's always some folks that come to listen to us. That's one. And then one of the others that we have on Tybee Island, we meet out there on Tuesday nights at the American Legion. And same thing, there's about, I'd say 15 or 16 singers that come every week, and we spend time singing there. And then we have on the Sundays, VFW on Ogeechee. It starts at noon and it runs till 3 p.m. And that's on Sundays. And we've been having a great crowd out there. A lot of good musicians come out, and we just have a great time out there. The VFW has wonderful food, wonderful staff. They really make everyone feel so special. And I know that club is more than just a VFW. There's so many people that go there to eat and to have a drink. It's just a wonderful time. So those that would like to come out with us on Sunday, we'd love to have you at the VFW on Ogeechee. And then another jam session that I've got to put in there is the one in Southbridge. We meet at the golf club once a month, and that is the third Tuesday of every month. And we meet there, and there's musicians from all over Southbridge, from all over the area, and we go out there and we meet and we sing. It's actually ran by a gentleman named Buster Cooper, who I think a lot of people know, and Regina Graham, who is one of the finest songwriters in the area. She's got songs out there and movies everywhere. So she's a great songwriter. And we meet there on the third Tuesday of every month, and we have a great time. There's a huge audience there that come. I think all the tables are filled with, residents that live in the Southbridge area. They have a great hot wings night on that night, and it starts at 5 p.m. and it continues to run until 8 p.m. But we sing there and everyone has a great time. We meet once a month. It's the first Sunday after the first Friday. We meet with Pat and his group down at the Presbyterian Church on White Bluff. There's a big group that comes there. So anyone that would love to come out and listen to us there, we would welcome you as well. But we have a wonderful time there. And so we just have a, every night of the week, it seems like there's something to do in this area regarding the music and those musicians, local ones or whomever that would love to come out and sing and play with us. We would love to have you come out with us. But I would say I've written about 100 songs through the years, and I've got a, pretty big catalog of my songs. But I've been writing lately here in the Savannah area with a gentleman named Bennett Arndt. And Bennett's a great songwriter. He's written with several of us on a co-writing basis. And I really enjoy writing with Bennett. We've gotten several songs lately copyrighted that we've written together. And I would think we've written maybe 23 or 24 songs. And then we always have several in the, I call it the background, that we're working on, behind the scenes. But that's kind of what we do now. And I'm
Well, all of the venues you've been talking about in terms of these jam sessions sort of remind me of something I keep saying to everybody every time I talk to anybody. And that is that Savannah, for its size, has such a huge amount of music, both locals who are singing at various locations around town, including You Can't Walk Down on River Street, or it used to be on Congress Street as well, but less there, I've noticed. But can't walk down on River Street without hearing singers singing songs coming out of just about every bar you walk by.
absolutely. You're right. Savannah, with it having so many tourists that come through, most of them, the tourists stay down on River Street down that way to enjoy the downtown festivities. But even those of us who live here, there's a huge, I call it the musical family, where everyone knows everyone. We all get together and have a great time. Sometimes we'll have some that go to the certain jam sessions and others go to others. But the core of the group is really strong. And Skip Ferguson is one of the main leaders at Bowtie Barbecue. He's been doing it for several years. We were at the coffee house, then we ended up at Cohen's Retreat, and now we're at Bowtie. But Skip does an awesome job in coordinating the weekly sessions and making sure that he keeps all of us engaged. And so we it's an awesome time. We have a great time. We normally have, guest singers that'll come in. I think the last 2 weeks we had a gentleman named Richard Booker that came in, and we let him join the session, and he sang, and he just really did an awesome job. So, everyone that comes to the jam does a great job. We're all different. I'm probably as country as can be. They asked me if I brought the potato salad. I'm that country. But we've got folks there that do music from all genres, and it's just a great, great night. All the jam sessions, but that one at Bowtie is very special to me.
As you started to grow up, you started singing in church, and it was seemed to be a very conservative church, but apparently they let you sing in bars.
Absolutely.
That doesn't strike me as being a very conservative church to let you take you out and sing in bars.
Well, I'm going to say this. I didn't start singing in the clubs until I was around 17 years old, but I always sing in church. I was in, and I guess I'll paint a little bit better picture of it. When I would stay with Mama and Papa during the summers, they had a church that they went to. It was a Pentecostal church, and Mama had two brothers that were pastors of churches, and we would go there, and I would sing. And then during the school times and the times that I was in the Anniston, Jacksonville area, I was involved heavily in a church there as well. All through the years, singing with the choir, singing specials with the youth group, and we would travel to different places and sing. So I was very involved still in the church during that time. And when I got old enough to go into the bars and sing, naturally the church folks wouldn't take me into there. But by that time, I had met a lot of friends and had a lot of supporters, a lot of fans that wanted to get my voice out there and get me in front of people. So that's how that I would go in. Like I said, they would take me in, let me sing, and then they would get me out of there. So I wasn't around too much drinking and things of that nature. Of course, later in life, I lived in Atlanta for 10 years, and I headlined at a place there called Southern Comfort Restaurant Lounge. And a gentleman by the name of George Jones owned it. Not the one you might be thinking of, but one just as famous to me, just as special. A lot of the musicians know George, and I would say anybody who's everybody traveled through his bar at some point in time and did shows there. Everybody from Kenny Chesney to Stella Parton to Tom T. Hall, and I can just keep naming them over and over, but they would have did shows there. And George owned the place for 20 something years. So even before I started singing there, he had a whole, he called the Wall of Legends, and had 8x10 pictures of everyone that had been there. They signed a photo and he hung it framed and put it on the wall. And I said, one day I want to be on that wall. And I did end up getting on the wall, so I got up there with the legends. I would sing with George and wrote I've wrote written a lot of songs with George Jones, George F. Jones. We've written so much together. In fact, on my album, Heartaches, Highways, and Hangups, George and I wrote most of those songs together. He's on one of the recordings called Damn This Heart. He's singing with me on there, and I'm doing his harmony. But he's a great guy, and he actually, his bar was huge, and he would get 500 or 600 people in there. It was always a very large venue, and it was a lot like Gilly's out in Houston. It was kind of that feel where it was partly a truck stop, partly a bar, partly a restaurant. And we would pack it in on weekends. I mean, I remember it being so busy on some weekends that the fire marshals would come and they wouldn't let so many in the building until so many left. It was that busy, and it was known all over, the north part of Georgia as like the last honky tonk of its type around. And I don't think there's any like that any longer. I haven't seen anything that honky tonkish, but it was a great place. And I performed there with Jimmy Emerson and his band, and a lot of great musicians there in that bar for several years. And that's where I was prior to moving to Dallas.
After starting your singing career at 17 in a local bar, you went off to college.
I
And I
did. I
take it
did.
you didn't study music.
I did not study business administration. The school I went to, Jacksonville State University, there, not too far from where I grew up. It was a great nursing school. It was a great business college. And they had a good music program, but me being a good old country boy, the songs I sing and the way I write didn't fit in with a lot of the music courses that they taught there at Jacksonville. So I took some beginning courses, but I actually majored in business administration.
And so you have a parallel career to your singing career.
I do. I do. I spent about 20 years with a company called Eckerd Drug Corporation. And those who have been around for a while remember Eckerd. In fact, we're the ones that merged with, or they bought us, CVS, back in the early 2000s. And I was with Eckerd up until that time and worked there for many years. I did everything from a store manager to pharmacy, all parts of the store, district managers, regional managers. And by the time that Eckerd and CVS did their thing, I was head of pharmacy operations for all the southern part of State Florida, 280 stores. So I would do that in the day and then sing at night. But it was nice because as I traveled with that company, I would be in a town that had, some bars and some music venues. So I would be able to perform at night, different places like Key West, Florida, Orlando, Florida, Fort Lauderdale. And I would always work some gigs out ahead of time before I got to that town. And I would always work a couple of nights in the bars there singing. And when I say bars, I mean any musical venue that they had, I would love to take advantage and perform at. And they always treated me so kind. They were always so welcoming of me to be there because my music is a little different. I call it, classic country, a little bluegrass sound, a little gospel sound, and a little pop sound, so everyone can find something in my music that they like, it seems like.
Well, tonight we're going to be focusing on some songs of yours, some relatively recent songs of yours. But I have to say, we're going to have to get back together sometime and go back and talk about Heartaches, Hangups, and Highways, because that's a great album as well. But let's start by talking about some recent songs. And the first one I want to talk about is Alabama on My Mind. And this is a love lost song. I'm up here in Seattle with Alabama on my mind. Well, you grew up in Alabama, and so is any of this autobiographical?
Well, it is. Most of my songs are situations that I either have lived or I've been close to and have observed, or some of the songs where my imagination just went, it saw a situation and it just, writers do that where the imagination went big and bold and I was able to write from that standpoint. But that song, Alabama on My Mind, it does have a special place to me. Like I said, I was raised by my brothers and I were raised by my mother, who worked at Fort McClellan actually as a waitress for all of our school and high school years. But early in life, my parents divorced. And I think I was around 10 years old, and my dad moved up to Seattle, Washington, and he was living up there for several years. And he actually reached out to my mother in 1981 and wanted to reunite, wanted to get back together. And by that time, our lives were already set. We were going in our own direction. But I started thinking how he would feel in that situations to want to go back and bring back to life an old love, his old family, and get everything back together. And so that's when I put myself in that situation and I was able to write that song. And I think that I really hit on the emotions that he was feeling. He actually heard the song later in life before he passed away. And he said, that song hit it right on the nail with him. And that's how that song came about, Alabama on My Mind.
As the story goes, the fellow who left and realized that he probably shouldn't have left and gets on the phone to call back home, to come back home. But we don't find out if that happened or not.
That's right. And that's the neat part of any song or any story is to have the audience or the listener wonder because they have also an imagination on their own. And as a songwriter, we hope to write songs to the point that everyone can relate to it in some way. Again, they maybe felt those feelings, or they know someone who have felt those feelings, or they thought about situations. So in that we left it like that, but in my story, it never happened. In my story, by that time, our life was set and we were going forward. My mom, when you're away from someone for that many years, you really don't know them. So she naturally didn't live with my dad forever. Both of them have passed on at this point, but it never happened like it should have. It never turned out to where they lived together for a long time after that. So, but yeah, my dad is who inspired me to write that song.
It's a long ways from Seattle to my cotton fields back home. And the road that lies between us through the years has grown so long. But if I could go back in time and start our love anew, I'd make a beeline toward the south. I'd come home to you. I bet my kids are growing. Has Scotty started school? Does he ever ask of Daddy? I know he wonders too. And if I could call back the years, I'd stayed right there with you. My leaving wasn't worth the nights of heartaches I've gone through. Oh, honey, so much time. Oh, honey, I wish forever you were mine. Oh, honey, could we try it one more time? I'm up here in Seattle with Alabama on my mind. I should have called you sooner, but pride stood in my way. Won't you believe me? I thought about you every day. My hands were trembling so bad when I reached to dial the phone. But if you'll only just say yes, I want to come back home.
Well, and you have two brothers, and I'm wondering if Scotty was one of those brothers.
That's right. I used Scotty's name in it. I think Scott was, oh gosh, at the time he was right at 7 years old, because he's a couple of years or a few years younger than me. And then we had one in the middle who they used to call the knee baby in Alabama. We called the middle baby that, and his name was Barry. And he's passed away from cancer, and had a really tough time at the end. But he's left behind some wonderful children who are just great, and they miss their dad a lot, but they've been very close to me through the years, and I love them. But Barry passed away. But anyway, yes, you're right. I do mention, Scotty is growing now and starting school and those type of things.
This is WRUULP, Savannah, Georgia, 107.5 FM, WRUU.org. We are Savannah Soundings Community Radio with Global Soul.
You're listening to WRUU, your local radio station, for people just like you, hosted by people from your community. The voices you hear are your neighbors, coworkers, and others from the Savannah and Lowcountry area. In other words, WRUU is your community radio station. Please help us by donating whatever you can to help your neighbors and friends stay on the air. Go to WRUU.org and support your local radio station. Any amount is welcomed. Thank you for your support of WRUU.
Theros Place, a nonprofit that provides residential services for survivors of human trafficking, will host an open house for those interested in learning more about volunteer opportunities, board committees, and the Courage Club from the board directors and the leadership team at Savannah Coffee Roasters, 215 West Liberty Street, Savannah, on Friday, June 5th from 8:30 to 9:30 a.m. More information is available at therosplace.com. National Preservation Partners Network CEO Kim Trent will discuss how organizations across the country are implementing versions of the Historic Savannah Foundation's Revolving Fund to save historic properties nationwide. The lecture at 6 p.m. on Thursday, May 21st at the Preservation Center, 323 East Broughton Street, Savannah. Tickets and more information are available at myhsf.org.
This music is often called classical music, but remember, Mozart, Beethoven, and Liszt were the rock stars of their time, so I simply call it great music. I'm your host, Dave Lake, and join me for four centuries of great music, with new episodes each week on Sundays from 3 to 5 p.m. We also have encores of these episodes on Saturdays from 3 to 5 p.m. from mid-June to early December. Welcome back to Music Local and Sustainable, and I'm your host, Dave Lake.
Tonight on Savannah Music Local and Sustainable, I'm talking with singer-songwriter Zach Landers. Zach will be performing at the First Friday for Folk Music concert on Friday, June 5th at the First Presbyterian Church, 520 Washington Avenue here in Savannah, in Stewart Hall there at the Presbyterian Church, beginning at 7:30 p.m.
I look forward to that. And actually, I've got two of my really good friends that are going to be there with me and help me, and they're going to entertain as well, Robbie Cooper and Buster Cooper. I call them the Cooper Brothers, but they're not related at all, but they're actually two of the greatest musicians and singers in the entire area, and I have a lot of respect for them. We play and sing a lot together in our jam sessions, and I asked them if they will be with me that night. So they're going to be with me, and they'll be entertaining as well.
And the second song I want to talk about is called Make This Honky Tonk My Home. And this is a really wonderful song for many reasons. I mean, because this is not the only song I think we'll talk about, but it really makes music important and the importance that music has to people and how music can lift your spirits. Music can make you dance. Music can make you feel much better. So much so that, you know, when things aren't going the way you may want to have them going, you could make a honky-tonk your home.
That's right. And that one was inspired at Southern Comfort there in Atlanta, the club that's owned by George F. Jones. And we would have situations just like that, to where we would have, from time to time, there would be a gentleman or two in there that had problems, you know, with their wife. And it was kind of their home. You know, the bar only closed a few hours a night. It closed, I think, from, you know, like 4 a.m. until 7 the next morning, but they would have to get out of there then. But other than that, they were in that bar and it was their home. And most of them always came in, had their acoustic guitar with them, and we would have a good time singing. But of course, when they were approached by the young ladies who wanted to date them, these guys said, look, I'm here for the music. I'd rather just be playing music. My wife's at home. I'm not here. I don't want another lady at the point. I want to just sing music with my friends. So I took that attitude and wrote it for that song. And you're right. It's a great song. And it does, folks can relate to that.
And also, the way that you use rhymes, as in, we can tip our glass to Johnny Cash. And you mentioned here George Jones, Merle Haggard and George Jones. In this case, the Merle Haggard and George Jones, probably the famous George Jones, is referring right to in this song.
Absolutely, absolutely. I think that everybody, the hag, as they call it, and of course the possum, George Jones, and of course Johnny Cash, who is such an idol in the industry. Well, all three of them are. And so you're right. I was able to pull their names into it. George and I actually wrote that song together, and he's the one that came up with the Johnny Cash line. But it's when I started pulling the other names of the other artists. I thought that would be interesting. And I thought it would be a song that all the folks in the bar could sing along with when the band would play it and we would sing it. And everyone did. We would go up to sing and they would say, are you going to sing the honky tonk song? They called it. And we would. And we always had a great time with that song.
And the other part is the pun that is part of it. And the pun is basically, I'd rather be here making music with all my haggard friends, as in haggard as the meaning of looking gaunt, exhausted, worn out, typically very tired, pale skin, circles under your eyes, sort of at haggard, because you've mentioned in the chorus, haggard and haggard. I really love that.
Yeah, you're right. And that was on purpose, because all those guys, they were haggard. And of course, a lot of us were haggard at the time. But and they would have, some young ladies that would come up and want to meet them and greet them, and of course, dance with them. But most of the guys would say, look, I may be haggard. I've got haggard friends. I just want to sing with them. I just want to have some time, singing, writing, and sitting around the tables in the bar and exchanging stories, old stories. And that's what we would do a lot at that bar.
Sitting in a honky tonk with one thing on my mind. I don't want to spend tonight alone. Since my baby left me, nothing's been all right. That big old house of ours just ain't a home. Mr. Bartender, pour me a double and keep them coming. Somebody pass me my old guitar, I'll start strumming. We can tip our glass to Johnny Cash to tear down on some Haggard and Jones. I think I'll make this honky-tonk my home. Perhaps I'll take a rain check, dear, this time. Mr. Bartender, pour me a double and keep them coming. Somebody pass me my old guitar, I'll start strumming. We can tip our glass to Johnny Cash and tear down on some Haggard and Jones. I think I'll make this honky tonk my home.
So it sounds like George Jones' Southern Comfort there in Atlanta was a place where people could come in and sing songs and entertain the crowd that's there. But it also sounds like there maybe was an old jukebox there.
There was. We would play it when the band would take breaks, but there was an old jukebox there. By the time I left there, it was electronic as the ones are today, playing digital sounds. But back then, it actually spun the 45s. And of course, you go up and put your quarter in, or 50 cent. And of course, then a dollar at some point. But yeah, I'd play those old songs. And, we were able to just keep some of that old country. And I was always so interested in learning about the old singers. And I would be very inquisitive to George F. Johns about them. And he would tell me the different ones that would come. And you know, some were so nice and gracious, and they had a few that weren't as nice and gracious. You know, you had a few that were just happy. You had a few that were demanding when they were there. But anyway, it was a great venue. And anyone that lives near that area or North Georgia or any truck driver, I would say that if you ask any truck driver about Southern Comfort, most of them will know about it. We had a young lady that would stay on the CB radio back then, and she would talk to the truck drivers, and she would kind of bring them into the club, and it was a huge business. And of course, there was a TA truck stop right next door as well, so we would let the trucks park in our parking lot. It later closed down, and that did hurt a lot of the business in the bar. But the truck drivers, you know, if you ask them, they'll say, yeah, they know about Southern Comfort. And they loved it. And of course, they became regulars as they would go through there. They would plan their trips to be able to stay at the hotel, you know, across the street or the truck stop. And they would spend a lot of time there in the bar with us. And of course, I was one of the ones that asked a lot of questions that loved to engage people. A couple of things, reasons I'm a people person. And the more I can learn about the lives of the singers and the writers, I think that helps me because I want to, you know, emulate the style that they have in a lot of ways. And, you know, one of the singers that I really admire is Tom T. Hall. I write like him a little bit in some ways to where he always tells a story in his songs, and I like to do the same thing. Tom is a great writer. They called him for years the storyteller writer of Nashville, and he always did a great job. I grew up listening to him. I grew up listening to all the older stars. I remember this a lot. We would get ready to go to bed at night, and we had some those large 33 albums. And I remember most nights we would put those three of those on, and they would play, then drop down to the next one and the next one. And by that time, our needle it wouldn't stay on the record. And I remember us having to go, and we would strap a quarter down on top of that needle so it would stay, you know, flat enough to play those songs. But we went to bed many nights hearing the albums of, you know, Jim Reeves, that Bill Anderson, Freddie Hart. We had his album. We had albums by Dolly Parton, Porter Wagoner, Conway Twitty. We had a lot of those. We always went to bed listening to country music.
And do you think that that experience, going to sleep with country music, or was it simply being from Alabama, that was the trigger that really moved you into country music as a performer?
Well, I think there's a little of both. In Alabama, you meet all kinds of folks. It's just a canvas, or I call it a quilt, of so many different types of individuals in Alabama. And I was able to, you know, take a lot of those experiences and bring them into my music. But my inspiration has really been off of the older country music stars. You know, just I've always been just mesmerized by them, and I've respected them, and I've hung on every word. I've listened to songs over and over and over again. And then just, you know, as I would travel later in life, big stars have been by there. I always had a lot of questions about them, and I've always, you know, loved meeting them. In fact, about 2 weeks ago, I was performing VFW Club right outside of Atlanta, Georgia, and they had me up there. I was booked for one night there and was having a great time singing. And Stella Parton, Dolly Parton's sister, she came by the club, and she got up there on stage and sang with me some. And it was just great spending some time with her. And I go to dinner with her occasionally. Her best friend is my best friend, so we got that connection. So with Stella Parton, but she's awesome to sit around dinner table and talk to. She's got stories on everybody. And if you know Stella, she's not shy about words. If she has an opinion, you're going to know that opinion by the time you leave the dinner meeting. But a wonderful lady, a beautiful lady, so talented. And just she's one that when she speaks, everyone just listens intently. She's got this voice that just is commanding in such a beautiful way. You always, when you leave, her presence is something that you take with you every time. I tell her that, you know, she always says something that I come home with. And I ponder, and I apply to my life, and it always makes me better in so many ways. And Stella Parton is just like that.
Well, your friendship with Stella Parton means that you probably know all the secrets of Pigeon Forge, Tennessee.
I do, and I know most of the secrets from the stars that she traveled with. You know, Stella, actually, she would open for a lot of the large stars like, you know, Merle Haggard and George Jones and Porter Wagoner and Lee Greenwood. she traveled and she could tell us some stories about all those personalities and some of the things that happened. I will tell this story. Here's a funny story she told a few months ago when we went to dinner there in Atlanta. She said there was an entertainer. I won't mention his name on here. God bless him. But she said that his demands when he would travel to an auditorium to sing were so much more than everyone else. He demanded a certain type of food, a certain type of drink. You know, in the green room where they set up where the stars can go and sing in between their shows and sing, you know, when they're doing sound checks and things of that nature. So she was traveling with him, and he said, I remember Stella saying that he told the individual running the show, he said, look, my folks don't want to eat with her folks. He wanted a big separation between the two bands since she was opening and he was the, you know, the front runner of the show. And he told the individual, he said, look, I don't want us to eat together. I want the bands to be totally separate when we eat. Now, this star, he had one thing in mind, but what he missed is by saying that, Stella's group went in and ate first. They got the good stuff. They ate as much as they wanted, she said, and they were fuller than ticks when they went back to their bus. And this guy brought his band in there, and the food had already been picked over. A lot of it had been eaten, but they said, look, you said you didn't want your band playing with Stella's band, and I got the biggest kick out of that when she told that story.
Yeah, I know the people here at the Savannah Music Festival, and we'll hear occasional stories about what major stars who come through have requested. And again, I won't name names, but there was one band that came through that requested something to smoke that really is illegal in the state of Georgia. So there's some things that they couldn't provide.
Absolutely. It's amazing some of the demands that a lot of the stars make. And then when you talk with them, they all have come from simple childhoods. And I just wonder where that happens, that it changes from, you know, the simplicity to where that they become, I call it snooty or, you know, better than thou type attitude. When that happens, there's a breaking point there. And I haven't been able to put my fingers on exactly when that happens. But I know some stars that are out there today that are doing very well. I remember when they were more simple and when they were more acoustic, I loved their music. And I just hung on every word. I absolutely loved their music. And then they would get to a point in their career that they would, I guess, have the money or the settings to bring in these huge productions, I call it, you know, these huge shows that were just bigger than big. And they would do their shows there, and they would then they became unapproachable. They became much more demanding. They would speak of themselves in third person a lot of times, you know, as if they were a product instead of who they are. But yeah, there's a point there, and I can't imagine. I don't really know when that happens. Or now some don't let that happen. It doesn't happen with many, but there are some that they completely change when they get to a certain level of entertainment.
This show is Savannah Music, Local and Sustainable. It's focused really on local here in Savannah and artists coming through Savannah. So I'll talk to sometimes national artists on this show, but they're passing through Savannah. So I talk to them about introducing them to the audience. But I do have two other national-oriented shows where I deal with national-oriented individuals. One is all classical music, you know, like 21st century classical music. So it's the composers and performers of today of that genre. The other is called Evening Eclectic, which is anything and everything I want. So I'll talk to singer-songwriters on that one. I'll talk to jazz musicians on that one with very straight-ahead jazz. I'll talk to very progressive jazz individuals. I'll talk to bluegrass individuals. I'll talk to even people who are doing classical music, just not the 21st century living now composers. And so I deal a lot with managers, and I deal a lot with performers, and some really big names as well. And it is really interesting because some people will say, I listen to a show with a big name, and afterward they'll say, you know, that person seemed really normal. And I said, yeah, most musicians are really normal. Most musicians are the friendliest people you'd ever want to meet.
Absolutely. I heard one gentleman say that when he thinks he's larger than Lars, that when he goes home and his old buddies get around him, they bring him back and let him know his feet have to be on the ground. And they said, you know, they don't treat him like a star. They treat him like one of their buddies. They talk about old times together. But you're right. Some of them are so down to earth, so approachable and so thankful and appreciative of their fans. You know, I think that musicians, when they realize that their income and their whole, you know, lifestyle, their whole livelihood is based upon the fans. If the fans didn't buy their music, didn't come to their shows, then they wouldn't be existing to the level they are today. So, and those that talk a lot about their fans and how much they appreciate them, then you see those folks last forever. They're not the first in, first out. They're the ones that are the foundation of music. They last a very long time. And, you know, you can think of some of the stars out there that every time they get up to where they win an award, I know if they really sincerely thank the fans, then they get it. I've learned from some musicians that, you know, that they understand that their audience is made up of several different types of individuals, you know, those with different beliefs, those with different political stance and all this. And they always, I've learned those never take a hard stand. And the reason is not because of their belief. It's because, look, they want everyone to come together. Music is a sanctuary, and they want everyone to be able to come together, enjoy the music. And so smart musicians know how to do that and keep everyone happy. And that's how it should be in the music industry. This industry is not meant for us to politicize it. It's not meant for us to be hard on our opinions. You know, when we get together, we sing. And like in Savannah, in these venues, we never do a lot of small talk. We go in and every moment of those events are filled with music because we go from one performer to the next. And when it comes your turn, I guess is what we call it, you better be ready to sing that first note. You better be ready to start or they'll pass you over. So there we don't congregate to talk about other things. We're all about the music. So that's the glue that holds all of our relationships together.
Well, and that's the other thing about musicians, too, and watching them live is to get the feel for how they interact with the audience. And some are very interactive, some are very personable in person, but when they get up on stage, they're very, very different. They're very busy with what's happening. Because sometimes, like, a band leader has to be so concentrated on the show and everything that's going on in the show. I was talking to a very personable individual, just a wonderful person to talk to. And during a live performance that I saw her in, I saw two live performances at the same festival. One, she was a member of someone else's band. And the other one, she was the band leader. And her interaction with the audience was 180 degrees apart in those two roles. Because when she was just a band member, she was constantly looking at the audience and winking at them and playfully interacting while she's playing. It's just a natural, I love you guys for being here, you know, and we're trying to do everything we can. But when she was the band leader, it was exactly opposite. She was really, you know, stayed, and because she was concentrating on everybody that was in the band and doing stuff, because it was a big band and a lot of different individuals who rarely play together, which was a great thing about that performance. But still, she was really sort of concentrated and about that. And I asked her afterwards, saying, you know, you weren't your normal self. And she said, believe me, I wasn't my normal self because I was so concentrated on everything that was going on stage.
Right. I can imagine the intimidation there, especially if you have some big stars playing in the band, you know, behind you and you're performing. I'm sure that she wanted to do right. She wanted to, you know, make sure that everything was perfect, because I know how bands are. They want everything perfect, just like the singers do. And we've often said, if we don't work together, we're going to both look bad. If a band doesn't play well for the singer and vice versa, then it can really become a mess in a heartbeat. But so it's important, I think, for the singer and the band to synchronize together, to spend some time together, do sound checks and practice their music ahead of time so that it's not just a mess. I've said this a few times, too. I said, you know, one thing you want to do is come in and not practice on the audience. You know, they paid their money. They come in and they're spending their time there to watch you do your show. And the last thing you want to do is deliver to them a mess. You want to have your songs down pat. You want to have everything like it should be, because they're, you know, we owe that to them. You know, they're the ones that keep us in business. And so we need to always know that. And I think it's important. You hit on something well that says, you know, a good entertainer, you know, makes eye contact with the audience. You know, they keep them engaged. And I found that to be especially helpful for myself as well. There's something about when you're in the audience and you're watching a performer on stage, and when that performer makes eye contact with you and you know they're making it with you, that is one of the greatest feelings in the world. And I know it's really inspired me as well. When I would be in the audience watching some folks, I would just pray they would look my way and I could make eye contact with them. And but great performers do that. They engage that audience, and by the time everyone leaves the show, they all feel better, they all feel good. And that's the whole idea of entertaining too. There's so much out there in the world that's bad. There's so much out there that we can talk about that is not good and positive. So at the show, or when they come in to see it, if we can just be that sanctuary, just be that point of refuge to where they come in and we can lift them up, we can let their minds of all the problems leave them for a couple of hours, then we feel that we've done our job at that point.
Well, most of the venues here in Savannah are quite small, and so you're often very close to the performers. And now Stuart Hall has a proscenium stage, and so you are separate from the audience. But the way that they have it lighted, you can do that. You can reach out and see and chat with, sort of, in a sense, members of the audience. And so that is a wonderful venue that is both formal but also informal. But even seeing some performers on big auditoriums, it's amazing how some performers... The audience is dark, the stage is lit, and you know darn well, if you've ever been on stage, they can't see squat. I mean, they can't see anything out there. But they're so able to give you the feeling that they are seeing you, that they are playing for you, that they are communicating with you. To this day, I just am amazed and in awe of when a performer can do that.
Absolutely. You know, that's you're right. When you're on stage, the spotlight does blind you. There are some times, though, that you're able to see, you know, some of the folks out there, but, you know, the goal is, and, you know, I put myself in their slot. If the entertainer would make eye contact with me or acknowledge me in some way, then it's always makes me feel good. And that's been very inspiring.
Well, the next song I want to talk about is, it's really a sad song because it's a love song, but a sad love song because it's called "I'm Not the One You Need." And it really is a person looking at themselves in terms of a long-term relationship that they're having, that they are, you know, they realize that they've fallen short and that they really can't provide their partner with all the things that they need.
That's exactly, you really hit the essence of that song. I remember when I wrote that song, I said, look, I'm going to write the song from a different situation. I'm going to write it to where the person singing the song and that individual knows that he or she can't be all that they need to be back to the person. So when that line that says, you know, I'm not what you need, then that kind of has two meanings, meaning that, you know, I know you have needs that I can't fulfill, but I'm also really not what you need. Because the perspective the song's written by, that individual had been in love with someone before, and they knew they couldn't love to that level ever again. And they knew that, you know, the person wanting them to be with them would want them to do things that, as a, you know, if you're really, your heart's in it, you would do, but you just couldn't put yourself completely in it. So rather than give, you know, half of yourself, you'd rather give all yourself. And if you had to give half of yourself, it's best to give nothing at all. So I've had a lot of women relate to that song on the women's side. And they've said, you know, that they have wanted to be with a certain gentleman, or they fell in love with a guy and it broke their heart when they realized the person couldn't be everything that they wanted them to be. And really, I was tickled when I had the idea to say, well, I'm going to flip this love story, because I've never heard anything written from that perspective. I'm sure there might have been, but I've never heard of one. And I wanted it to be different, but I wanted everyone to leave that doing some soul searching. I know there's a lot of people in relationships that probably they're not in love as they should be or could be. And then I know that many of them have loved someone in the past. So I guess it's better to have loved and been in love than to never been loved at all. And I know I've heard that saying all my life. And that's kind of the roots of that song, where it came from. But there's a lot of individuals that love to hear that song. In fact, I recently had it recorded by from a lady's perspective, studio musician out of Nashville, studio singer. She was singing the song, and you know how it works. You have a great song, you send it to the studio artist, studio band, and then from there it gets pitched. And so in this particular song, a female singing it, I said, you know, this female takes this song to a whole new level now. And I said, I was telling someone the other day, I said, that song really would be for a female to sing. You know, I could see someone like, you know, Carrie Underwood or Miranda Lambert or someone of that level singing that song, because it's just as strong. In fact, I think it's more strong, powerful than it is when I sing it from my perspective.
Yeah, and many songs about love are, in a sense, selfish. They're thinking about themselves all the time. But this song is the complete opposite. It's someone who, you know, the line, someone to hold you in the middle of the night, someone to comfort you and dry away the tears you cry, someone to share your dreams and your every fantasy. It's not that I don't love you. It's just that I'm not the one you need. And so it's really spoken from a real point of sympathy and love.
You're exactly right. The perspective that the singer feeling those feelings is just that, saying, you know, I have to let you go because I know you need more. You need someone that will be there to do those things. And I know I can see that need that you have. My heart is somewhere else, so I'm not the one you need, you know, but I see what you need.
So many times I look at you and see the disappointment in your eyes, reminding me that I have fallen short of things I never realized. Oh, but I can't make my heart feel something that I know will never ever be. And I'm sorry that I cannot be the one that you're needing me to be. Someone to hold you in the middle of the night. Someone to comfort you and dry away the tears you cry. Just not the one you need. These chains you wrap around me, they're so binding, they just don't let me go. But many years ago I gave my heart to someone else, and I still love them so. Still it hurts me when I see you cry each time you reconcile with disbelief. And I'm sorry that I cannot be the one that you're needing me to be. Someone to hold you in the middle of the night. That I don't love you. I'm just not the one you need.
Tonight on Savannah Music Local and Sustainable, I have been talking with singer-songwriter Zach Lenders. Zach will be performing at the First Friday for Folk Music Concert on Friday, June 5th at the First Presbyterian Church, Stewart Hall, 520 Washington Avenue in Savannah. And we've got so much more to talk about in terms of your songs that I'm going to have you back next week.
This has been another edition of Music Local and Sustainable, and I've been your host, Dave Lake. Save this time for another show next week.
Well, I know we ain't headed for the Hall of Fame. Gonna give it what we got, man, it ain't no shame. Let me know if you can hear me. Check, check, one, two. Let me know if you can hear me. Check, check, one, two.